The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it. Believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said, I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of a decomposing jack-o'-lantern to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the gambler's fallacy, also known as the Monte Carlo fallacy. Can I just congratulate you on decomposing jack-o'-lantern? Why have we never thought of that before? That's exactly what he looks like, isn't it? He's been that colour all along.
Yeah.
And that kind of collapsing, wrinkly...
It's one that's been sat outside for a few days.
Yeah. It's starting to leak. Yeah. Yeah, and you're thinking, I'm going to have to pick that up at some point and move it. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought about it a while ago, but, you know...
October.
It's the time, so...
It's the time.
I kept it for now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To wheel that one out. Nice. Yeah, so tell us about the gambler's fallacy.
Yeah, the gambler's fallacy is when people get confused about whether stuff that's happened in the past is likely to influence stuff that's going to happen.
Right.
And they do it in a specific way where basically you've got something that is happening and continues to happen. Mm-hmm. And it may be a trend, it may be something that is connected, or it may be independent events like flipping a coin and getting heads each time.
Yep.
And the fallacy comes when people assume that because it's happened so many times in a row or has been happening for a while, it's due the opposite.
Right.
So you get like five heads in a row. They think somehow tails is due, are more likely to happen.
Yeah, yeah. So all the smart money, in inverted commas, would therefore bet on tails.
Yeah. It comes from a fundamental misunderstanding of the regression to the mean.
Right.
Because rare events happen, but less rare events, by definition, happen a lot more.
A bit more often.
And so where you get anything that has any possibility for variation, things like coin flips, over a huge number of coin flips, you will get roughly half and half heads and tails if it's a fair coin. Yeah. In that, you will also get lots of clumps of lots of heads in a row, lots of tails in a row, and things like that. But where the confusion comes, and what leads to this fallacy, is people feeling like that is somehow kind of a universal force that's making it work out as as half and half. And so if you have some heads in a row, then you have to have also then some tails to balance it out. Otherwise it won't work.
Otherwise you won't get the average that we're all expecting.
Yeah.
Well you will. It's just happening over a lot more coin tosses than you're expecting it to happen.
And that's the thing, is that people, when they spot a pattern, when they spot something unusual, like a string of heads in coin flips, they are starting from that point and going, oh, well, we've just had lots of heads.
Yeah.
So we must have then some tails to balance it out, because otherwise this would be weird. But what they're ignoring is there might have been a string of tails, just... You know, just
prior to that,
yeah, exactly.
Just coming in to watch that little bit, up until that point, the person's been flipping it,
and there will be
many more in the future.
Even then, if there was a string of equivalent tails 5 years ago, or will be 20 years in the future with that coin, it doesn't, you know, that's how it all balances out, is over a long period of time with lots and lots of iterations of the thing.
Yeah.
And it happens because the odds are 50-50. It doesn't It doesn't happen so that the odds can be
50-50. Yeah. Because sometimes it lands on his edge.
Yeah. You know, yeah.
Rarely.
Very rare that happens.
Very rare that happens, but it does. And also, the underlying trend is that it's still, well, it's not a trend, it's still completely random.
Yes.
Which one will come up.
Yeah, no matter how many times one thing has happened, if it's an independent result, like a coin flip, it doesn't change
the probability
of which way
it always resets to zero each time. Yeah, otherwise, you know, you're employing the infinite improbability drive.
So fundamentally, this is people misunderstanding that. It's either confusing independent variables for something that is dependent, that has an effect on what will happen next, or it's seeing a trend and assuming, well, it has to end at some point, which is arguably true in many cases, and therefore assuming that that end must be imminent because this trend has been going on a while.
And so it's people getting itchy in a Monte Carlo setting and going, right, I've got to assume that the other one's going to come up.
Assuming that one outcome is due because it hasn't happened for a while.
Yeah. And then and putting all your money on that.
Works.
Yeah. No, which it is now. And it's how casinos make their money.
Well, that's how most casinos make their money. If you're Trump and you own a casino, you somehow manage to make it go bankrupt. And I think we have some insight in our first example as to how that happens. Because this is Trump talking about his misunderstanding of the trade deficit that America has with China.
But with China, we're at $375 billion trade deficit. So we started a process, and we'll see how it ends up. But we're going to win. You know, I always said we had an imbalance of $504 billion. And I always said, when you're down $504 billion, you can't lose.
That's not true. No. You can absolutely lose.
Yeah, and it was, and that truth was held to be true.
Yeah. The idea, the theory here that he seems to be suggesting, and kind of it's borne out by, because he's talked about this so many times and he's tweeted about it, it's borne out by his general talking about it. It seems to be, we have been losing for so long and we've lost so badly that essentially the only way is up.
Yeah.
The only thing we can do now is improve, which is not the case. You can also get worse.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because there's no karma. You know, the universe isn't looking out for you. There isn't a guarantee just because you've lost all that money and that you've got this big trade deficit. You know, spoiler alert, it wasn't a trade deficit. It wasn't a problem. I mean,
it was a trade deficit, but trade deficits aren't inherently bad. It just means you're buying more stuff from that country than they're buying from you.
Yes, yeah. And we talked about that many a time, everybody has spoken to Trump about that. This is nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah, he thinks that it is the US losing money somehow.
Yeah.
And also, by extension, once he becomes president, that's his money.
That's his money. So he's losing.
So he feels it personally.
Yeah. He's got money. If he's got dollar signs attached to it, then it's his.
Yeah.
So yes, just because it's really bad doesn't mean it's going to get better. You know, it's not true, Professor Brian Cox, with your song, things can only get better. No, things can get a lot worse. Yeah. You know, it's just random. It doesn't get reset. It doesn't kind of go, oh yeah, we're owed a good turn now.
Yeah.
Doesn't work like that. Do you know what that is? That's a fantasy.
Yeah. So our second example is from Trump's interview with Chris Wallace. And Chris Wallace played a few clips of Trump talking about how coronavirus was just going to go away.
You said at one point,
it's one person coming in from China, and we have it under control. It's going to be just fine.
When you have 15 people, and the 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero, that's a pretty good job we've done.
I think we're going to be very good with the coronavirus. I think that at some point that's going to sort of just disappear, I hope.
I'll be right eventually. I will be right eventually. You know, I said it's going to disappear. I'll say it again.
But does that disappear?
Does
that discredit
and
you?
I'll be right. I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. You know why it doesn't describe? Because I've been right probably more than anybody else.
So he reckons that
yeah.
although he's been wrong every single time
yeah.
when he said it's just going to go away. And at this point, there were 64,600 new cases every day in the US.
Wow. Yeah.
And he was still saying, yeah, it's just going to go away.
It'll go away.
Like, yeah. by magic, basically. Mm. And his theory is that although he's been wrong every single time, at some point, if he keeps doing it, yeah. he's going to be right.
Yeah.
So might as well just keep saying it.
Yeah.
until yeah, yeah. the trend ends of you being wrong every time.
And then we could forget about that.
yeah.
Because as we all know, a right outweighs several thousand wrongs. Yeah, I'll just keep saying it until I'm proved right. And at which point everyone will forget how shit I was. Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah.
And our final example is kind of similar, and it's his take on climate change,
right.
and whether it is, in fact, man-made.
I think something's happening, something's changing, and it'll change back again. I don't think it's a hoax. I think there's probably a difference, but I don't know that it's man-made.
So he says it's changed. You know, there's clearly a change because, you know, he listens to the science, so he knows there's a change.
He knows science.
Yeah, yeah.
Many scientists can't believe how much he knows.
He has a natural instinct for science.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it'll change back. So
right.
Yeah. The fact that it's been, the trend has been warming for all this time, and we understand why, and we know the reasons, and we haven't done enough about it to stop that.
Yeah.
It'll just change back, you know.
It'll be fine.
It's going to, at some point, basically, and the assumption embedded in there is it'll change back soon enough that it won't seriously negatively impact humanity. What Trump is claiming, essentially, is that we don't need to do, you know, be part of the Paris Accord. We don't need to do all these things because
it's not going to harm us.
Because, it's just, it'll change back. And he said around that period, time period, he was saying, he did an interview with the Associated Press where he said, climate just goes back and forth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Basically. So, you know, it's just one of those.
Cold, it gets warm. Yeah. It'll be fine. Yeah.
So
you go to Florida, it's warm. You go to Alaska, it's cold.
Yeah.
You know, it'll change.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
Well, we've had a hectic day today in British politics. It's Thursday, the 20th of October. So I thought I'd, in a callback to when we had our guest presenter, Chris, who talked in general about the entirety of the invention of the Premier League as an example of the politician's fallacy, which was to kind of identify a problem and then fix it in the wrong way.
Something must be done.
Something must be done.
Like,
this is something. So we should do that. Yeah, and that was his invocation. So I'm going to invoke the whole of the Tory party, the entirety of Conservative Party politics as an example of the gambler's fallacy, insofar as they're in a continuous cycle of changing tack. They always believe that the other numbers will come up and thus back that other position. They hedge their bets because whatever is current, in order to be successful next time, any minute now, things will have to change. So they're saying this current status is not going to succeed anymore because it's been going on too long. Something is bound to be different. So what we should do is bet on the different thing because that will be where the successful money is. And then they flip back the other way sometime later after that position has been not so successful, maybe, in order to guarantee success when it doesn't
get to be successful. It never turns out to be successful.
No.
That's the problem.
Because they always flip it back. No, it doesn't, because as soon as you do, the grass is greener on the other side. Mm-hmm. Or you start to suspect that your grass is turning brown. They never think, perhaps it's us. Perhaps it's just us as a whole. Or perhaps it's that we've got two warring factions within our party that we keep having to appease one way or the other, and neither of them will work.
Only two?
Well, But, and I also, what I've noticed of late, is that, as with any addictive cycle, the high that is sought isn't as high each time, and so the gaps between tack changing fixes seem to get smaller.
Oh, that's why we're getting people in power for just
Exactly. Yeah, so just a scintilla of an iota. Yeah, because, so let me cast your mind back to 2016 and the Brexit referendum. The position adopted by Boris was let's back leave, because that's the opposite of what we got and will guarantee success for the country and thus the party and him personally. So he went around promoting that change was better, manufacturing everyone to follow his use of the gambler's fallacy, because he's going, we can't have all of this. We can't have it remaining the status quo. We can't do what Cameron wants, which is to just, let's just keep it how as it is. So he manufactured that whole, well, change will be better. Change isn't necessarily, change is always for the better. No, it's not. It's not always. So they stirred up this notion that, well, it's going to change and we ought to be behind the change. So Cameron resigned because Leave won and Remainer, the status quo, Cameron lost and resigned, and Theresa May became leader. And then Boris came in with even more change will do us good. So we were leaving the EU, but we weren't leaving in a leavy enough way. It wasn't enough leaving under Theresa May, because she proposed this withdrawal agreement, but it wasn't leavy enough. We've chosen the tails, so, and now tails is being flipped, but it's not taily enough. So that's where Boris got angry about Theresa May, who eventually got ousted because her withdrawal agreement was insufficient for the hard right to go with, because it contained continuity thoughts, continuing flipping the heads, if you like, about remaining in a single custom territory, which maintained the free trade between EU and the UK for a transitionary period, because that would sort out the problem of a hard border between Northern Ireland, which is in the UK, and the Republic of Ireland, which is in the EU. But that wasn't enough. So it's too much of the same as before to be a successful strategy. So in 2019, Boris was the Get Brexit Done candidate, and he brought fresh new ideas. We've got some Brexit done, but it hasn't been done enough. Now I'm going to get it done. And with an oven-ready deal, which was actually just the reheated version of May's, and then actually no deal whatsoever. Angela Merkel described it as a Scheisserkrieg about the hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic. And then, of course, Boris continued to be Prime Minister for a while. And then
that's a very generous way of describing that period.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. then he fucked it up by becoming a convicted liar and a cheat and a criminal. And all of those true, and still not listening sufficiently to the right-wing needs, which were mediated through Dominic Cummings, because he fired him. So there was a backlash against that. And after many, many instances involving parties and rule-bending for mates and dodgy financial deals for mates during the pandemic, Boris was eventually forced out for bringing the party into disrepute. And they're saying, right, we've got to change and go the other way. And at one point, actually, what's interesting is the use of the gambling analogy in the way they talked about that. So in December 15th, 2021, Wes Streeting went on to, I think it was Newsnight on the BBC, and he described Boris thus.
The way in which the Prime Minister has not just undermined himself, but undermine public trust and confidence in public health measures at a critical time, I think your voters will start making judgments about your judgment and your party. And in the end, Boris Johnson, as a bad brand, is a busted flush. He's been found out.
So he's a busted flush. So there you go. It's that kind of, I guess that's a poker term.
The busted flush analogy is just that you've got a number of one suit and you're waiting, you're hoping that one of the remaining cards that's going to come out and be on the table is the same suit so that it will complete your flush. Yeah. And when the last card is put out, the river card, and it isn't, that you've got a busted flush and you've basically got a useless hand if you haven't anything else.
So I've forgotten which flip we're on, but eventually Boris went. So that was 7th of July 2022. So it took a while between the busted flush of December and July for him to go, mainly because eventually the party betted on it being better that he went than stayed. So they kind of went, So in order to force that, they kind of went, let's everybody resign. And that was another brilliant day. I think we broadcast that day too, where 50-odd members of parliament resigned in order to make him go, or in order to make him see that he ought to go.
Yeah.
He didn't want to. And, you know, he's done nothing but go ever since. I mean, he's still on holiday now. He's a, the parliament is sitting. He's an active MP. He's no
is
longer
he? PM. I didn't even realise that.
Yeah, he's MP. he was my mum's local MP. But
I don't know why I didn't
know that.
I think it's just the fact that we haven't seen anything from him since while he was still Prime Minister. He fucked off and then that was it.
He's a MP. Yeah, he's, you know, he's operating from the Caribbean at the moment.
Wow.
People talk about a reset as well in politics. And I think that has analogies with the coming into the number of coins being flipped. Okay, so we're going to go back to, back to the beginning of flipping of the coins.
Yeah, we'll just draw a line under the ones we've done so far and then
we'll start again. So we won't have any expectation of which ones are going to come up. We'll just start from now and then you flip three heads in a row and go, oh, it's bound to be tails next. Let's all move to tails. Yeah, so where do you want to put your money? I want to put my money on tails. Yeah, but the problem was in the leadership contest, the two candidates were more of the same old status quo economic responsibility candidate, Rishi Sunak, and Liz Truss, who was the change candidate. Let's not have status quo. Let's have unregulated growth, growth, growth. And campaigns from Nadine Dorries and Jacob Rees-Mogg said that everybody ought to bet on Truss because that's all about change. And we should go there because that's where the success will lie. Consequently, after their campaign, the party and the media puts all their bets on Truss. So they're going, right, OK, here we go. Let's all gamble on that because that will be great. And, you know, things like, at last, a proper Tory budget. And then, of course, we got on the 23rd of September, the proper Tory budget, and the economy tanked, just as old status quo economic responsible Sunak said it would, exactly as he said it would. So then on the 14th of October, Kwarteng was out and Hunt was in. So we're back to the other way, because they all bet on the markets reacting favourably to those proposals put forward by Kwarteng and Truss being reversed by Hunt.
Yeah, and Hunt was one of the first out in the original leadership race. Well, not the original leadership, the one that Liz got in on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and because his economic model was apparently unacceptable at that point.
Yeah.
But then she was like, oh, yeah, okay, I've fucked up. You need to come
and it's Sunak's one. Apart from the windfall tax on the billionaire. What was it that first attracted you to the billionaire donor VP? And now here we are, not even a week later, 20th of October, right now, today, and the betting has gone back the other way. We've now got to get rid of Truss. That is not really out of any concern for the economic plight of the ordinary people, but from a real fear that the ordinary people would not vote them back in again ever, because Labour is 36 points ahead in the opinion polls. So that kind of... So it's got quicker and quicker and quicker. And the same card game analogy popped up again on October 16th. Lord Rose, the Tory peer and chairman of the Asda grocery store chain, described Truss to the Financial Times as a busted flush. So Boris was the busted flush, got replaced with Truss. Everybody kind of went, oh, okay, look, we've flipped Boris. Boris's head has come up so often. It's really not smart to continue to bet on him. We'll all bet on somebody else, and we should bet on Truss. And now Truss is the busted flush, and they're all betting on somebody else.
It's a better analogy for Johnson. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's as great an analogy for Liz Truss, because a busted flush suggests that you had a hand that could turn into something good.
Yeah.
Liz Truss is
just had a fistful of cards.
She's 2-7 off suit, is what she is going in.
Yeah.
And basically you've got very little chance of that becoming anything useful.
So who will they bet on now? And if we go back to the gambler's fallacy, what we should be betting on is the opposite of what's been turning up so far. Because
so someone competent.
So, and also someone that won't incense the right wing of the party. They really didn't like Jeremy Hunt coming back in.
The impressive thing is, like the effect that Trump had on people's memory of W, each time they do something, it makes you kind of look back with a bit of nostalgia for the shit show that was.
Yeah. And the last time we got heads coming up in a row.
When Jeremy Hunt, who is awful person, who, because he was the culture secretary, he regularly got spoonerized as Jeremy Cunt, culture secretary.
Yeah.
And yet, when he was brought back in as chancellor, I feel like there was a sigh of relief from people.
Yeah.
Oh, it's probably going to be okay. Jeremy Hunt's back.
That's right.
It's like, what the fuck? How bad has it got that we're seeing these people and going, yeah, they're much better than what we've currently got?
Yeah, exactly. And it took Miriam Margolyes, the kind of cuddly actress who looks like Tom Baker has let himself go, to go on Radio 4 saying, oh, yeah, I've just met Jeremy Hunt in the foyer out there. And he said, I said to him, yeah, you've got a hell of a job there. Good luck. What I really wanted to say to him was, fuck you, you bastard. Live on air. Uh-huh. You know, it was brilliant. And they kind of went, oh, no. And she knows full well she can get away with that.
So do the producers, though. Anyone who gets Miriam Margolyes on a live show is kind of hoping something like that's going to happen.
Yeah, quite. Yeah. Then they can pretend in a kind of pantomime way. Oh, we shouldn't allow you to say that. Yeah.
Ever since she went behind that door, her time was running out. Billions blown off balance sheets every time she opened up her mouth. Seemed the markets can't be beat. Though they turned the screen to face her, she never stopped to think how the others must see the faker. She's much too thick to even blink. Changes. Tory's playing games. Changes. Perhaps it should have been the Rishi man. Changes.
David Bowie there, of course, with the most appropriate song for the moment, Changes.
I was absolutely convinced we were going to get some Kenny Rogers for this episode, but there you go.
We're just islands in a stream.
No, The Gambler.
Oh, yeah. No, it was too many. It was the Changes that did it.
Yeah,
that and the line, perhaps it should have been the Rishi man.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah,
yeah,
that was my favourite bit. That was, I wrote the entire thing around that. Yeah. Yeah.
So in The Fallacy of the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. And our first example this week comes from The World According to Garp.
Oh, wow.
The 80s adaptation with Robin Williams of the John Irving novel.
Yep.
And in this scene, Garp and his new wife are looking for a place to live. They're looking around a house and a plane flies into the front of the house. And this is Garp's response.
We'll take the house.
Garp.
Honey, the chances of another plane hitting this house are astronomical. See, it's been pre-disastered. I'm going to be safe here.
Yeah.
So the idea there that because a plane has already smashed into this house. That can't happen again. Because the chances of that happening twice to the same house are astronomical.
Yeah, because lightning never strikes twice. Yeah. Except it does.
Except it does frequently, yeah. It's misunderstanding the independence of those events. There's a joke, which I was absolutely convinced I would find an example of someone saying in a film or a TV show or something, but couldn't, where a statistician says that when they go on a plane, they always take a bomb with them.
Right.
Because the chances of there being two bombs on the same plane are astronomical.
Mm. What are the chances of that?
So if they have a bomb, they'll never get blown up on a plane.
Exactly.
And of course, the joke is that the fact that he has a bomb doesn't actually have any impact on the odds of someone else also having a bomb. So our second example comes from The Simpsons, and this is the beginning of an episode, and it is a kind of fantasy sequence where Seymour Skinner is playing with his army men, and this is kind of what's going on in his head.
Something's coming, Sarge. Something's big.
Stay strong, man. The United States is due to win a war sometime.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
So again, the idea that an event is due because it hasn't happened for a while ignores the fact that these events are independent from each other and the fact that it has gone one way multiple times does not actually impact the way it's going to happen next.
Do you think his comment there informs US military strategy? Let's just keep having some wars. We're going to win one at some point. We're due one.
It's very possible. But a possibly even clearer example of exactly this comes from the Marx Brothers film, A Night in Casablanca.
Yeah.
This is a scene where Harpo has put some money on the number 5 in roulette, and it came up, and he left it on there to have another go.
Here we are, Monsieur Dan. Encore, number 5 repeats again. My assistant will carry it to the cashier, monsieur. You mean you want to bet them all again at number 5?
Oh, no, Rusty, no.
Hey, you crazy. You lose that money. We got to save something for a rainy day.
Ah, gambling, eh? Monsieur Cornblow, this gentleman has won twice on number 5, and he wants to bet them all again.
Well, that's his hard luck.
But, Monsieur Cornblow, it is far over the limit. If he wins, he will break the bank.
Who cares about the bank? I'm running a hotel.
You idiot. The bank is the hotel.
Keep your medals on, fat boy. Do you know what the odds are against a number repeating 3 times?
Never mind the odds. I've seen it happen before, and if it does, it will break the bank.
Not if I roll the wheel. You sure you want to go through with this? Okay.
Stop that wheel!
Sorry, Monsieur Galou, the play has started.
3 times in a row. What a sucker.
Number 5. The richest sucker in Casablanca. Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Because that works really well on radio. Harpo Marx.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Doing absolutely brilliant mimes. Okay. Yeah. When he says, we're supposed to be saving it for a rainy day, he just kind of pulls out a massive umbrella out of his raincoat.
So, yes, it does lose something with Harpo, but what we do get is Groucho saying, let him bet. You know, he's the manager of the hotel where there's casino, and he's saying, you know, let him bet, because do you know what the odds are of a number coming up 3 times in a row? And the thing is, if you're starting out from before you've started rolling it, and you're deciding to place your bet on number 5 3 times in a row, and just leave it there no matter what happens and expect to win 3 times, yes, the odds are astronomical. But he is saying it after 5 has already come up twice.
Yeah.
And so the odds at that point of a third 5 are exactly the same as it always is to get a 5, which is about 1 in 37, because it's a European casino. 1 in 38 in America.
They have triple, double naught or something.
They have double zero. Yeah. Right. Whereas European ones only have a single zero. There was an event in 1913 in Monte Carlo, and that's partly why this is also called the Monte Carlo fallacy, where at the Monte Carlo casino on August 18th, 1913, the roulette ball went in black numbers 26 times in a row.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, the odds against that happening, again, when you're starting from the beginning, are like millions to one. But after the 25th time it's happened, the odds of it happening a 26th time are roughly 50%, because you've got black, red, and the single zero. So each time, it isn't affected by the previous spins. But on this night, because it had come up black several times. By the time it had hit black 10 times in a row, people were starting to put big amounts of money on red because they were absolutely convinced that red was due. It had to be red soon because it had been black so many times. And so they
still
were,
only 50-50.
It's exactly the same. As any other spin that night or any other night, there's no reason for them to put a bigger bet on. They should just put whatever bet they would normally put on because the odds are identical. But each time it came up black, people increased the amount of money they put on red because they became more and more convinced that red was due.
Wow.
And it was more likely to be red. And people lost enormous amounts of money. Because they were just stacking their money. Like, people were putting their life savings on red because black had come up so frequently.
Wow.
And they assumed that in order for the luck to balance out, in order for there to be an equal number of reds and blacks, red had to come up. And again, eventually it does. Eventually you're going to get a red.
But not because there have been a lot of blacks.
Yeah, just because it's a 50-50 chance each time.
Because it might. Yes, it also puts me in mind of Horse or Laminator on Taskmaster, the one with where Joe Brand, they had to guess what Greg was holding, picture of a horse or a picture of a laminator, and Joe Brand managed to guess correctly 13 times in a row, I think.
It was a lot. It was ridiculous. Yeah. But yes. Yeah. It does have real-world effects, not just in casinos, but there was a study called Decision-Making Under the Gambler's Fallacy from 2016. These three researchers looked at a number of different groups of people who make decisions. One of them was asylum judges, so judges who decide whether to accept applications for asylum in the US. What they found was that after granting asylum to one applicant, they were just slightly more likely to deny it to the next applicant.
Ah.
It's like half a percentage point.
Yeah.
But it's statistically significant over the number of kind of trials they did, where basically the theory behind it was that these judges feel like, well, you know, I'm not supposed to grant all of the applications and I'm not supposed to deny them all. And even not necessarily consciously, they're like, well, I've just granted one, so I also have to deny some. So it makes it slightly more likely that they're going to deny the next applicant, even though each applicant is potentially, you know, they're just as likely to be worthy of asylum and each one is independent from the others. But they saw these patterns.
And it's possible that the next applicant has exactly the same details in their case as the previous one. But it will get denied because there's this sense that I ought to go the other way now. Yeah. I can't do all of them like that that would be a bad thing.
Balancing out their own decision making.
Yeah.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody. As well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out three Trump quotes, two of which are real and one I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
See, I've worked it out that I'm just going to do the opposite of what I've been doing before, because that's bound to work, because it's 100 times in a row of doing it the way I've been doing it. It hasn't worked out entirely in my favour, so I'm not going to chance it. So I'm going to do it differently.
Right.
That's bound to be successful.
Now, interesting, I'm surprised this hasn't ever come up, actually. We're 111 episodes in. No one has asked, and neither of you, about the likelihood of each number 1, 2, or 3 being the fake one, and how that works, because you might have a run of ones and think, well, it can't be one again. I don't know if you've ever
thought that's where I'd be going
could,
wrong.
You could see. Kind of like keep a tally and think, well, it's been one for 3 weeks in a row. It can't possibly be one again. And to avoid that possibility, right from the very beginning, I have been randomizing it by using a dice to choose which of the three is the fake one.
But you see, once you get around the fact that you've had 30% ones, the 30%.
I don't know if I have. I haven't checked. I just do it randomly without worrying about what the last one was. So if it's
now it's 100, it should be 33 and a third each.
Yes, theoretically.
So, which would leave me with the dilemma as to kind of, well, I haven't, it's obviously not going to be any of those because nothing's got to balance out.
If you go back through the archive and find that actually it's like 41s and 52s and not very many, threes. Yeah, you think, well, it's probably three. It's got to be three, isn't it?
It's got to be three. Three's got to come up. It needs to catch up.
Exactly.
Because otherwise we won't get 33%. Yeah.
So, there we go.
Yeah. So we'll hopefully somebody out there will do another concordance of the show and do that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. But yeah. No, I honestly,
as well as cataloguing all the songs that I've done.
I haven't looked. I don't know how frequently each one has come up. I deliberately don't. I deliberately don't consider which one it was last time. Or...
That's never occurred to me. And now you've
now you're going to be wondering.
That has introduced the it completely. It's irrational. It is irrational because all it is gut instinct. And I'm going, oh yeah, which one's it going to be? But because we're just at the point now where they've all come up 33 and a third times.
I don't
there's
know.
No way of knowing. Well, I'm assuming that because you don't know. So, of course, it
once we do thousands of episodes, then it will be roughly 33 and a third each. But, you know.
Maybe. It might be millions.
But over just 100, I think randomness is too clumpy to be sure.
Right. Clumpy randomness.
Anyway.
I've got all their albums. Yeah.
this week.
Right.
It's actually not Trump quotes. So I'm mixing it
up. Oh, okay.
Because Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker did a debate. Mm. And it was Herschel Walker's best debate performance ever. It's as far as I know, the only time he's ever debated anyone. He set expectations very low.
Right.
I mean, not just through his campaign and being generally awful, but by literally saying in the run-up to the debate, I'm not a smart man.
Okay.
And you know, Warnock's going to show
the bar
up.
Low.
Yeah, Senator Warnock's going to show up to the debate and he's going to basically wipe the floor with me.
Yeah.
You know, he's a smart guy. I'm not very clever. So he was terrible, but but did better than most people expected.
Oh, okay.
Because of the incredibly low expectations that he set for himself.
Nice. Yeah.
Basically, he didn't fall over and shit himself. So as far as the right wing are concerned, he absolutely smashed
it. He's a genius.
So, yeah, these are some answers that he gave in the debate. And one of them is made up. Statement number one. This was in response to the question, what is one thing you would do about inflation? And the moderator said, be specific.
Right.
He said, well, you have to blame Senator Warnock because, first of all, he and they have raised taxes. And third, he hasn't. The energy independence. We were and now we aren't. And that has meant we have to go to our enemies for gas. So the one thing... the one job I would do about inflations is that we got to be energy independent again so we can have the energy we need. And that is too important to Georgia people to not have that.
That's brilliant. Yeah. There's almost built in U-turns in there. Inflations. That's no idea what inflation is. No. So if it comes to pumping things up, yeah. We need some energy for that because, you know, some of those things are big and we don't want to be blowing them up ourselves. Okay.
Statement number two.
Yeah.
This was in response to the question, do you support federally mandated healthcare?
Mm-hmm.
Well, right now people have coverage for healthcare. It's according to what type of coverage do you want? Because if you have an able-bodied job, you're going to have healthcare. But everyone else have healthcare is the type of healthcare you're going to get. And I think that is the problem. And what Senator Warnock wants you to do is depend on the government. What I want you to do is get off the government healthcare and get on the healthcare he's got.
Okay. Everyone else have healthcare is the type of healthcare you're going to get.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah. So we need to get off that healthcare and get on the other one that other people have.
Yeah. Yes. And statement number three.
Right. Yeah.
This was a direct response to Senator Warnock talking about how he had voted to cap insulin prices in the Inflation Reduction Act, and how Herschel Walker had said that he wouldn't have voted in that way. He says, I believe in reducing insulin, but at the same time, you've got to eat right, because he may not know, and I know many people that's on insulin, and unless you haven't eating right, insulin is doing you no good. So you have to get food prices down, and you got to get gas down so they can go get insulin, and you continue to pat yourself on the back. But right now, families are starving right now. Families are hurting, and they're hurting because of the bills and the laws you're passing.
Well, he's got my vote.
Okay. He is currently polling at almost exactly 50% against Senator Warnock.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. That's because he talks people's language.
Yeah, he says it like it is.
Yeah. Says it like they have. Yeah, yeah.
That's got to be a T-shirt. I like Herschel Walker because he says it like horse.
Yeah. We missed out on Anti-Growth Coalition. Yeah, we should have had one of them. It's just ridiculous. So the thing is, having for 100 episodes, 100 times doing this, I know that you're very adept at picking up people's speech patterns and then turning them against me. So, but on that basis, see, I'm not doing it any differently from what I usually do. I'm just going, yeah, what was it last time? Of 2, right, it's worse, 3 then. You know, that... Okay, so I'm drawn to the ones I really like, in the hope that I can hear him say it. So which of the ones are archly aping his clumsy grasp of the English language? Okay. Inflations. Plurals might be the tell. There's enough kind of non sequiturs and walking down blind alleys. Oh no! Okay, I think number 3 is the one that you made up.
Okay, so of the other 2, which are you more convinced by?
I think I'm more convinced by the able-bodied job, number 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And number 2?
The healthcare one. Yeah, is the one you made up. No.
Is real.
What?
And I've left in the example I'm going to play, there's like a couple of sentences more, but what I left it in for was the pause before the moderator responds to what he just said.
Okay.
Well, right now, people have coverage for health care. It's according to what type of coverage do you want. Because if you have an able-bodied job, you're going to have health care. But everyone else have health care is the type of health care you're going to get. And I think that is the problem. And what Senator Warnock want you to do is depend on the government. What I want you to do is get off the government health care and get on the health care he's got, to get you a better health care. So that's what I'm trying to do, to make you independent rather than dependent.
Thank you, Mr. Walker.
She's kind of, I can see the look on her face. Kind of, what? Wait a minute. And she's kind of waiting for the meaning to catch up with the words. Failed to finish, did not finish. And so she just went, okay, thank you. Stopped, have you? Right. Thank you.
Okay.
It's just, it's not an answer.
No follow up questions, no notes. That was perfect answer.
Yeah, it was just, let's listen to, it's like listening to someone speak a foreign language. You just kind of, you hear them start, it gets to the end, and if they've stopped, you leave a pause to check they've stopped, and then you go, okay, thank you.
The bit of that answer that makes grammatical sense is the bit where he says, what Senator Warnock wants you to do is depend on the government. What I want you to do is get off the government healthcare and get on the healthcare he's got. Talking about Senator Warnock, a senator who is on government healthcare. Because he's fucking senator. So the senators get healthcare that is part of Obamacare. It's part of one of the options that people can choose to go to the ACA.
Yeah.
Because that's how that works. So suggesting, get off the healthcare you've got, which is the government healthcare, and get on good healthcare like senators get.
Which is
government.
The government healthcare. Yeah.
So.
So he's not off. He's not saying, we should have a healthcare system that is better provided and fair to all.
I mean,
he's not
saying anything approaching something as intelligent as that.
No, he's just kind of going, he's a senator, so he must have healthcare. And he goes, he's got the stuff that Obama put in place and that Trump couldn't find an alternative to.
Also, the idea, he says, because if you have an able-bodied job, you're going to have healthcare. And let's stop there before we get onto the healthcare is the type of healthcare you're going to get. That's not true.
Oh.
11% of families who have someone in full-time work don't have insurance. 7.5% of families with two adults in full-time work don't have insurance. It's just not true to say that if you have a job, essentially, you have insurance. Lots of jobs don't come with insurance. Mm. People with more than one job sometimes don't have insurance. I think it's over 15% of families where an adult is in part-time work don't have insurance.
That's the point of universal healthcare.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's to cover that. And 11%, 17% is a huge.
So he's wrong in at least two ways.
Right.
There. Yeah.
Before he even gets to.
And more than 60% of it didn't make any sense at all.
No. Everyone else have healthcare is the type of healthcare you're going to get.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a company called Everyone Else Have? What kind of healthcare have you got? I've got Everyone Else Have. I know them. And they're any good. Yeah, pretty good. Quite cheap. Everyone else have. Yeah. No.
So you also thought number one was real?
Yeah. You see, now we've had one that's right. I'm now thinking that the next one isn't going to be right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we could
have stacked.
We could have done this game from the beginning, like the Monty Hall problem, where you pick and I open one of the doors and say, well, it's not this one. Do you want to change your mind? But we haven't done that. But that's another really good example of how terrible humans are at probability.
Yeah. But it's just the basis of the entire game shows. Of the thing,
But people will fight to the death claiming that it's a 50-50 chance once one of the options has been taken away. And they're wrong. Anyway, so you also think number one is real, and number one is fake news.
I knew it. You see, should have given me the option to change the door. Nice.
So
well done. Yeah. See, it was the inflations
was
both the tell, but also the convincer.
The one thing I included from another thing that he talked about was going from first to third, missing out a second. He said, "You have to blame Senator Warnock because first of all, they've raised taxes, and third, we haven't got energy independence."
Well, that's because he's doing a gas saving blockchain on the gearbox.
He did that in an answer that he gave about gun control.
Right.
And so what he said was something like, first, I won't consider anything that would affect anyone's Second Amendment rights. And third, so second was in there and it confused him.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. It's like occasionally when you're reading from a script and the same word occurs directly below the
Yeah,
the
and your
line.
Brain just flips to the next line.
Yeah, and you end up reading the same line again.
So his brain was like, I've said first, I've said second.
That's brilliant. I love that. That is great. See, the one that got me, and also that about turn at the end, that I really like. We can have the energy we need, and that is too important to Georgia people to not have that. That's so good. But yeah. it's perfect. You see, you can do it for anybody. Yeah. Oh, so that means insulin is real.
It means, yeah.
Oh, my God. Three is real. Even better. Even better.
I believe in reducing insulin, but at the same time, you got to eat right. Because he may not know, and I know many people that's on insulin, and unless you have eating right, insulin is doing you no good. So you have to get food prices down, and you got to get gas down so they can go get insulin. And you continue to pat yourself on the back. But right now, families are starving. Right now, families are hurting, and they're hurting because of the bills and the laws you're passing right now.
So it's actually not an answer about insulin. Quite like his argument about you've got to get the food prices down because you've got to eat right.
I mean, because that's the main problem is the suggestion that if you don't eat right, insulin isn't going to do any good because people have type 1 diabetes, which is not an eating thing.
Yeah,
sure, eat healthily by all means, but insulin is the thing you need.
Yeah,
if you have Whether type you eat 1 healthily diabetes. Or not.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing to do with eating. Because you're eating the wrong things doesn't mean...
And there are plenty of people with type 2 diabetes who, no matter how healthily they eat, they definitely will still need insulin. It doesn't work in the way that he's suggesting where, you know, you can like have the insulin, but if you're not eating right, it's no good. It doesn't work. It doesn't do anything. Bullshit.
Yeah.
The capping insulin prices... which was part of the Inflation Reduction Act, which, you know, insulin is ridiculously cheap to produce and was incredibly expensive to consumers and is now much, much more affordable and is a thing that people need so they don't die. So that's a good thing. And there isn't a good answer. He's coming into it at a disadvantage because he's being asked to defend why he wouldn't vote for a cap on insulin prices. There's no good response to that.
No. So he's in compounding it by conflating
by misunderstanding
food
diabetes.
And then saying, oh, actually, you know, you also need to get food prices down. See, I thought he was going to go, you need to get food prices down and you've got to get gas down so that you can go get food.
Yeah. No, but he says so you can go get, because that's what's stopping people from getting the insulin is because they can't afford the gas prices and get. The, in
Very
his
expensive.
World, not capped price insulin. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm ashamed that I thought that was wrong now, that you made that up, because that's,
I mean, they're all bad.
They're all bad.
I didn't even get into the answer where he pulled out a fake police badge to prove he's a real police person.
Yeah. And it was like the one that you get. See, I'm actually a real member of the... I've got a passport that allows me to go to Tatooine.
Yeah.
Because in the 70s, I've got a galactic passport that I can flash at passport control.
Yeah.
And it will get me to, you know, the Death Star.
Yeah.
It's as real as his police badge.
Yeah. I have a T-shirt that says, I drank the world at Betty Burke's, which is a Aberdeen pub. It isn't proof I literally drank the world.
No, I ran the world because I did a running thing for Live Aid or something. Mm. So I ran the world an afternoon. I did run the world. I'm a viable candidate for the Tory Party leadership.
So yeah, he pulled out this fake badge, this little plastic badge that he'd been given by a sheriff to say, you know, well done, Herschel, thanks for doing a motivational talk for us. And the moderator basically said, now, Mr. Walker, you know the rules. No props. You very well know you're not allowed to have props. And he said, it's not a prop, it's real. And then he did put it away, and she was like, thank you for putting it away, you know, like a kindergarten teacher.
You know, you're not supposed to have brought the bear into the chair.
And then he went on various talk shows after to tell them how real his police badge was, and then decided to kind of double down on it by having thousands of fake police badges made that he can give out to people at his rallies or, you know, public appearances.
So that they all now become policemen.
Equally policey as he is.
Yeah.
Because they're all just like
not
his.
Not at all.
They're all fake police badges.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I want
it's amazing.
Those. Yeah.
So that's Herschel Walker.
But you can no longer get. Yeah, we should apply to get some of those because you can no longer get Liz in Liz We Trust merch.
Yeah.
Can't get it anymore.
No.
I got it. Should have bought one at the time.
I can make one, put it on the merch store.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, that'll do.
So, unfortunately, that means you did not prevail this time and you are still on 48.
The strategy. See, now you've planted the seed of the strategy. I'm going to have to spend the intervening time going back through all the episodes and seeing which one came in just to convince myself that. Well, it's bound to be this then in order to balance it out. Because let's face it, my strategy as of reading them through and applying intellect.
Shall I tell you an interesting aspect?
No,
an interesting aspect of my randomization is more recently, like over the last kind of, you know, few tens of episodes, I've used a single dice. And if it comes up one or two, I put it in place number one. Three or four, it goes in place number two. Five or six goes in place number three. At the beginning,
oh, there you go. Yeah,
4 years ago, I considered that and thought, it doesn't feel random enough. And so I did it with three dice and I made a little table of all the possible numbers that could come up and how likely they were.
Wow.
And put, and made columns where if, depending on which number came up, it was in that column. Because... For some reason, that felt more random.
More random.
But it's not. It's not.
No.
And then
it's just
that
random.
This is stupid. It's just, one dice is exactly the same.
Full stop.
So,
yeah.
So I now do it.
Brilliant.
I now do it the more logical way.
Yeah. 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 Which is to use a three-sided dice. Yeah. Yeah.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called the 9th January 6th hearing was not a logical fallacy. Because we got potentially the last one. They've kind of suggested it's the last one. But they're definitely still working on their report that they're going to hopefully put out early December, Jamie Raskin has said. And I mean, the big headline was that they voted at the end to subpoena Trump to get his responses and his kind of hold him accountable for his actions that led to the events of January 6th. So if they do agree with him to do that, then potentially there'll be another hearing, I guess.
There'll be a 10th one. Yeah. Yeah.
And he has
a Christmas special.
Yeah. He has said, after initially kind of yelling at them and saying how it's all a total bust and
why
rubbish.
Didn't you ask me before? Because you would have denied it then.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the Mar-a-Lago bust when he was going.
Absolutely.
Well, yeah. Well, you should just ask me. We did.
So he has claimed now that he will appear if that he gets to do it live on TV. Mm-hmm. So if they hold if they do a live hearing, then he will answer questions, or he will at least appear. Right. He hasn't said he'll answer questions. He might just take the fifth. Yeah. So there's some question of like, should they go along with that? Because obviously he's going to turn it into a shit show. I mean, they're not going to be able to control him. He's not going to respect their authority in any way.
No.
If they have a button that turns his microphone off, maybe it could possibly be something they can contain a bit.
Or at least if they put him, like they do when you have
like in a soundproof suspect.
Yeah, like in a soundproof booth with a camera. You know, a bit like the the Big Brother diary room where they just stick him in there and then they could just cut the feed every now, because that would be worse for him than actually. It's a bit like the Mueller investigation when he was advised, and then they went, "No,
you can't go there
and talk to them live." Yeah.
I mean,
because it will, in a way, they must be weighing it up, because they kind of go, "Well, that would be great because he would just hang himself."
I mean, I think there's every possibility they're going to try and Jack Nicholson him and get him to say it. Did you order the code red? You're goddamn right I did.
Yeah.
But the hearings have been very professional and very lawyerly and very responsible and to the point and sensible. And it's just, I mean, it is the old playing chess with a pigeon. Just shits on the board, knocks the pieces over and claims he's won.
Exactly, yeah.
So the question is that a good idea? I genuinely don't know. I think it would be amazing TV if they did it.
And it would be good to just, because they're going to ask him a question and then he will deny it and then they will play the video of him saying
it. Doesn't matter though. He won't. I don't think he'll even deny it. He'll just talk about Dominion and the massive dumps. Say what he wants to say anyway, which at the moment is reserved for his rallies, and the people who go there and the masochists like us who watch them to find out what's going on.
Dissect them, and to write similar things to them.
But this would give him another opportunity to be on live TV in front of people who support him and also people who are trying to discredit
the whole thing.
I don't think there's any chance that anything useful would come from it.
No.
But then I don't think there's any chance anything useful would come from it if they don't do it live either.
Yeah.
If they tried to do a recorded deposition like they have with so many other witnesses, I think he'd probably just take the fifth for everything, like Mike Flynn did, like Roger Stone did, John Eastman.
And then he claim it was edited anyway.
And it
was all faked. It would be interesting, wouldn't it? Perhaps what they should do is get him there, then not ask him any questions. Just get him there.
Just starve him of the oxygen of fame.
Of publicity. Yes, exactly. Yeah, don't give him a microphone. Don't put a camera on him. Don't ask him any questions. And then just play, a bit like, kind of an episode of Star Trek where Q puts the human race on trial and just don't let him say anything. No defence.
It's like someone who suggested a Big Brother series where they just put some kind of minor celebrities in a house and don't film it.
Just tell them they're going to be filmed.
Yeah.
So that then we can get rid of them off the airwaves for 10 weeks.
Kind of that.
Great idea. Yeah.
He absolutely would have fallen for that. There's so many times while he was president that we could have got rid of him for several days by telling him he was doing a kind of, multi-day conference thing. It was actually, in large part, it was a summary of all of the stuff they've talked about so far. They intersperse new things kind of throughout. But what they did very, very well, I thought, actually, was that each one of the members of the panel took a section and they kind of narratively told the process of what they discovered, who they talked to, what evidence they'd gathered. Sometimes they showed emails on screen. They showed some video clips of testimony that they'd been given. And they told the story bit by bit through each of the nine of them. They all did a great job of telling the story. They came across naturally and authoritatively, and they presented their evidence to back up what they were saying. It wasn't just kind of an assertion of what had happened and how they'd found it out. It was backed up with evidence wherever possible, and a lot and some new things were shown. Particularly, they have received, in fact, around the time of the eighth hearing, I think just within the kind of last few days after the eighth hearing, they got a lot of Secret Service documents. which they hadn't had access to before. And so they showed a lot of the exchanges of text messages and emails and correspondence among the Secret Service that included quite a lot of evidence that there were plans before January 6th that were known about and that the Secret Service had been tipped off about. There was an email shown about the Proud Boys saying that they think they will have a large enough group to march into DC armed and will outnumber the police so they can't be stopped. Their plan is to literally kill people. Please, please take this tip seriously and investigate further. And yeah, so several texts and emails like that. There was a communication between a couple of agents at the point at which Trump was tweeting about how he was disappointed with Mike Pence for not doing what he was supposed to do. And the Secret Service were saying, this is probably not going to be good for Mike Pence.
Yeah,
because they knew what was going on. And again, we heard a lot about the fact that on the day they were spotting weapons in the crowd, that they were not letting people through the magnetometers into the ellipse.
Yeah.
They showed a clip which I don't remember them showing before, although it was from Trump's speech. It was just I hadn't seen it in that context before. And it was of Trump asking during his speech kind of to the Secret Service and to the security there, saying, can we get these guys, can we get these people through the magnetometers on, you know, into the ellipse? Can we let my people in so that they can get closer?
Yeah.
And he was kind of, because he'd already said that, he'd already, from evidence that we'd heard from Cassidy Hutchinson, he had said, you know, fuck the magnetometers, they're not here for me, they're not here to hurt me. Let them in. I don't care that they've got weapons.
Yeah.
So he'd already been making that request, and for some reason I felt a little more chilled that he was doing it publicly during his speech, in an attempt to pressure the people who were keeping him safe and supposed trying to keep others safe.
Yeah.
To do something he knew was unsafe.
Armed people. In. Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. So it was. Yes, in that context, because, I remember hearing that clip before, but not understanding the context of it and thus the meaning of it. Yeah, so, you know, you kind of, some of his apologists will say, no, he doesn't mean all that. He knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
So he's kind of, you know, we'll let them in. Why have we got magnetometers? Well, to stop fully armed people coming into the space. No, let them in. They'll be fine. And then because I'm planning behind my bulletproof glass to get them to walk down to the Capitol with their arms. So, so let's get them all in because we find out that, there was some clips from Stone being filmed saying, so what we need to do is, you know, let's get right to the violence.
Yeah, let's get right to the violence, he was saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also the strategy ahead of that saying, what we should do, even it's a bit up in the air, we're probably not going to win it, but what we should do is just claim that we did.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a strategy that, according to Brad Pascal, who was working on Trump's campaign and I think became his social media guy, he said that Trump had planned to claim victory as early as July.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was, and I'm not at all surprised because it was that far back that he was saying this election is going to be rigged, and if we don't win, it's because they've stolen it and all of that stuff. So he was always laying the groundwork for that. He was always, even back then, arguing against mail-in voting and saying how it was unsafe and it would lead to cheating, and he was creating the situation where there would be this red mirage on election night, where all of the on the day voting would be counted before the mail-in ballots were being counted, knowing that his followers were going to be voting in person.
Hmm. Because that's what he kind of told them to do.
Yeah.
You know, and they were all the ones that are going, fuck COVID.
Yeah.
Let's go do it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that that allowed him to have this strategy that when he appeared to be winning on the night, he could say, well, clearly I've won. You know, you can stop counting now.
Stop counting. We're ahead. We're not even at half time. Yeah, I don't care. That's all. I'm going to take the ball and go off the field because we're ahead now. And it's just what's chilling was all the other clips of the various lawmakers and advisors that were saying, no, you can't dismiss and disparage the voting systems. You know, you can't do that because there's no evidence to support that.
Yep.
And then it would go 3 days later and then he's doing exactly the same thing. And you can't. You know, they're changing the chips in the machine.
Yeah,
so if you press Trump, it votes Biden. It's just, and what's chilling about that, now that he's out of office, you can kind of see it for the malevolent narcissism that it was. It's the stuff that we've just seen or we are about to see with Bolsonaro in Brazil, who can't believe that people are not voting for him. You know, it's gone to a runoff. He's not going to win it. You know, but what Trump himself described as banana republic stuff. It's horrific out of that, taken away from that context. So in a way, the whole presentation of that, prime time viewing up until episode 8, and then to tease us with the next one, and then to show us this stuff. We're that much further away, and we're now living in a world where all of that stuff has been revealed, and then to see some extra footage in the context of the Secret Service stuff that they've now made available.
They juxtaposed it very well of the people who, you know, testified under oath saying we had a meeting on this day and this is what I told him. He knew that this was a thing that was not true, and then kind of almost with a SpongeBob intertitle, you know, 20 seconds later. There's him saying, you know, this is a real thing, when we know he has been told it isn't true by someone he should trust and is just being willfully ignorant or knowing it's not true and saying it anyway.
Deliberately malevolent.
Yeah, deliberately. Exactly.
Yeah.
The main other thing that came out was footage that had not been seen before of the lawmakers on January 6th in their secure location that they had been kind of squirreled away to.
Yeah, yeah.
And essentially everyone except Trump making efforts to do something about quelling the insurrection.
Yeah, yeah.
Including particularly Pelosi and Chuck Schumer talking to the kinds of people they needed to talk to. The Secretary of Defense, the Governor of Virginia. Pelosi talked about talking to the mayor of D.C. About getting the National Guard in, about getting support from their police forces. And this is something which has been a line from the Republican Party over and over again over the course of the last, year and almost 2 years. That you know, it was Pelosi's responsibility to do something and she didn't do anything about it. She didn't get, you know, she didn't call the National Guard. And what we saw in that footage was that Mitch McConnell, Steve Scalise, Kevin McCarthy, other people who have said this about Pelosi were there in the room.
There, when
like
she was
a couple of feet away from
them.
Her, looking at her doing it at the time.
On the same call with the very people they said she wasn't calling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, of course, the right-wing Twitter sphere has claimed that this is all a hoax.
It's all CGI.
Yeah. This is fake.
They filmed it yesterday.
They haven't mentioned why Mitch, Kevin, and Steve Scalise would agree to take part in faking it.
Much less dress up in a mask and stand in a room with Democrats.
But their main argument initially is, oh, it's very convenient that she was being filmed when this was all happening, wasn't it? Oh, you know, what are the chances of that? The fact that she's being filmed means she knew this was going to happen. That, because she, she set it up. She, because, I mean, they
nobody's got
somehow,
telephones with cameras.
No, but they somehow ignore the fact that it's unbelievably clear Trump called people to go to DC. Like, he Trump and Bannon and all the others were saying, come to DC on the 6th, it'll be wild. Did a thing, then said, march down to the Capitol, and they're like, Pelosi did this. What the fuck?
Yeah.
But they they have that in their head, and they say she did it, and that's why she's being filmed, because she knew this was going to turn into something. And the reality is, it's not actually that people have phone cameras, although that's true.
Yeah.
The reality is, as we mentioned in our last episode, her daughter Alexandra is a documentary filmmaker.
Yeah.
And the fucking transfer of power on a day we knew in advance was going to be wild, that there was going to be
a
rally.
Twitter
yeah. Sphere. There was going to be a rally. We knew there was going to be objections to it. Yeah. She was there.
Place to be.
She was there in DC filming her mum and then got, you know, sent into the secure location with the lawmakers. So that's why there was a professional documentary film crew there. Yeah. It was Alexandra Pelosi, whose job it is to do that shit.
Yeah. Just like there was a guy who was with the Proud Boys who was the documentary filmmaker for the Proud Boys.
Yeah.
And so he was there. Of course he was there because he knew something was kicking off. Absolutely. So he was documenting the thing.
Yeah, yeah, he was.
Many people were there as
one of the
documentary
early hearings,
filmmakers. Yeah, it's willful papering over of the truth, isn't it? In order to kind of get, what would it take for them to say, oh, yeah, no, you're right, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're being presented with facts.
It's really hard to tell. Yeah. And I think partly it's hard to tell because we are open to this, to these arguments. And so when we watch this stuff, it confirms the stuff we already think.
Oh, yeah, look at that. Yeah, yeah.
And so it is very easy for us to look at this stuff and go, well, yeah, clearly Trump did this and Roger Stone did this and Pelosi and Schumer tried to do something about it.
Yeah, or at the very least, so that was happening at that time and this was also happening at that time. So, you know, we're persuaded to read it in a certain way. And of course, if you're a right-wing bigot, then you're going to perceive it through a different lens.
All the excuses you can for it.
Yeah, yeah.
And if those excuses don't work, you can ignore stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend to be objective about it. I believe that Trump was fully responsible, and the evidence that I have seen in watching the committee hearings has absolutely confirmed what I already believed. In my opinion, that's because I was right when I thought Trump was responsible for it, and so naturally, the evidence that has been presented confirms reality. But I recognise that that's exactly what you think if you have some cognitive bias and, you know, confirmation bias about things that that confirm the things you already think. I'm not claiming to be objective about it, but I do try to make critically evaluate the stuff that also confirms the things I already think. There's a limit to the extent that you can realistically do that, because especially when again, this is cognitive bias, especially when you're right, if you are because there is an objective truth, if that aligns with your beliefs and the evidence that you're presented, of course that evidence is going to confirm what you believe, because it is showing you the objective truth.
But I think, yeah, I think the key word there is objective. If yes. it's an objective truth, see, what the right maintains in this context is that there are no such things as objective truths. There is no such thing as a fact. Mm. Everything is an opinion.
Yeah.
Everything is up for interpretation. Well, you're bound to see that as that because you're this particular leaning, and it's not true like that. This is what it actually means. But then when you're presented with timed evidence of here's Pelosi with Schumer on the phone to the Attorney General saying, why don't you talk to the fucking president and get him to call them off?
Yeah.
Whilst there are people smashing windows and pushing over police officers and trying to kill people.
Yeah.
The only way that they can excuse that is to say, yes, I can see that there is footage of a massive crowd pushing up against a tunnel of policemen. But you see, that crowd, they're not Trump supporters. Yeah. They are Antifa, the Anti-Growth Coalition. They're Antifa dressed up as Trump supporters. And then you go, okay, I see you've moved the goalposts. I see your Trump supporters dressed up. I raise you. Filmed evidence from their telephones,
yeah.
with the timestamps on it, and their parking receipts,
yeah,
and the fact that their face is exactly the same as their face on their Proud Boys profile.
I'm not saying there isn't a huge amount of evidence that suggests we're right about this,
but
I'm just saying that it's important to remember that somehow some people look at this and see it differently.
Yeah,
They're seeing something I'm not seeing, or they're ignoring stuff I am seeing.
Yes, exactly. It would be interesting, I guess, to, you know, in a kind of Louis Theroux, Sacha Baron Cohen kind of way, to sit down with somebody and say,
"Yeah, talk me through your thought process.
Explain to me how you're getting to that conclusion."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It would be, yeah.
I think it'd be scary more than interesting.
Yeah.
I think we'd last about 5 minutes before our head turned white and we're running out of the door screaming.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that Marsh does on Be Reasonable. And I just, every time I listen to it, I think I honestly don't know how he does it.
No.
I couldn't keep my patience for that long.
No. I couldn't.
It's very impressive.
From committing grievous bodily harm much of the time. Yeah, it just wanted to go, oh, for fuck's sake, shut up and slap them. And my podcast would be 2 minutes long. It's just going to go, so why is the earth flat? Go, oh, well, it's, oh, shut up.
Shut your festering cake hole.
And then there would just be a sound of
you make me sick.
You make me sick. And next week on, let's approach the prejudice. Yeah, we'll be talking to them. Will you shut up? Yeah. And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
Right, it's been a long week, and we had to watch some Matt Walsh videos for the Patreon bonus the other day, so this week I'm only doing good news stories. I'll start with an update on the Venezuelan migrants who were used as political props by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who looks like the guy who gets bitten by a vampire and keeps it secret from the rest of the group. You'll no doubt remember that DeSantis and his minions flew the 50 migrants from Texas to Martha's Vineyard and messed with their paperwork in a transparent attempt to get many of them deported. Well, it looks like his stunt might have backfired a bit. Texas Sheriff Javier Salazar has submitted some federal paperwork certifying that these migrants were victims of a crime, since this means that they are assisting law enforcement and need to be available as witnesses during the investigation, they're now eligible to apply for special visas reserved specifically for victims of or witnesses to crimes. If the applications are granted, they'll be able to stay in the US for 4 years while they start the journey towards citizenship. Thanks, Ron.
Nice. Having spent some time immersed in the pool that Matt Walsh sits in so long now, his skin's all puckered, and try to figure out how he takes a normal thing and spins it to appeal to his right-wing, spume-flecked, angry mob followers for money each day, well, he's somehow got to maintain the lifestyle his $4.9 million YouTube earnings have afforded him, I guess. It really comes as no surprise that fellow pool scum Sean Hannity on Fox News managed to try to wring a tiny acidic drop of hate from an exclusive voicemail he'd obtained of Joe Biden talking to Hunter. Dun, dun, da! Laptops, Russia, dodgy deals, you may ask. And then he played it. And Biden simply says to Hunter, "It's Dad. I called to tell you I love you. I love you more than the whole world, pal. You've got to get some help. I don't know what to do. I know you don't either. I'm here no matter what you need. I love you." Gee, what a monster! Impeach him now, ringing up your son like that the very moment he's going through hell with drug addiction. Call yourself a loving father. And well, yeah, everybody in the entire Twitter sphere did exactly that and called him a great guy for demonstrating nothing but unconditional love, even in the face of not knowing what to do to help. Of course, that's exactly what Hunter, as with anyone going through trauma, actually needed. The reassurance of unconditional love does help. Writer Paul Rudnick tweeted, "It's not only inspiring, it's something no Republican has ever said to their child," which is how you end up with the bitter emptiness of Trump and Fox News. As we found out from Mary Trump's book, unconditional love is just something Trump never had. So he and his toadying acolytes can't see the value of it. And that's just the thing, you can't buy that. So Donnie's not interested, nor owns any.
Early in-person voting has started in Georgia, and the good news is that turnout on the first day was massively up over the last midterms, with 131,000 voters showing up at the polls compared to only 71,000 on day one in 2018.
Wow.
Of course, somewhere close to 50% of those voters have probably cast a ballot for Herschel Walker, a man I'm pretty sure is two third graders dressed as a Senate candidate in an elaborate prank. Damn it, I said good news only. Sorry. Given the vital importance of these midterms, such a huge initial turnout is great, especially since higher turnouts are likely to favour Democrats, and especially since this is happening despite Republicans' attempts to make it harder to vote. It's a good sign, but this is not the time to get complacent. The pressure needs to stay high, momentum needs to be maintained. So whether you're in Georgia or a state with competent Senate candidates from both parties, I mean, there must be a couple, right? They can't all be people like Herschel, Marco Rubio, Blake Masters, J.D. Vance, Dr. Oz, Ron Johnson. Holy shit, there's a lot of them, though. Anyway, wherever you are, don't forget to fucking vote.
Yes. Apparently, in the Republican world, hurricanes only go to wreak havoc where you tell them to. For example, Trump and his Sharpie making the weather go where he said it would, like the Canute he is. And now Florida man Ron DeSantis seems to be able to have allowed only the Republican-leaning counties of Florida to be battered sufficiently by Hurricane Ian to warrant a relaxation of the voting rules to accommodate the difficulties people are having in the aftermath. Voting rights groups had previously asked the governor to extend the statewide voting registration deadline, which ended on Tuesday, and to add more early voting days, as well as implement other accommodations, including extended early voting days and the ability for voters to send mail-in ballots from addresses not listed in voting records. DeSantis, you'll be pleased to know, did agree to those accommodations to make it easier for voters to vote in Lee and Charlotte and Sarasota counties. Yeah, but not in Orange County, because miraculously, DeSantis guided the hurricane around it. No, don't be silly. It's because Orange County votes Democrat. Duh. Of course, DeSantis said the decision to only accommodate three counties was based on the collective feedback of the supervisors of elections across the state and at the written request of the supervisors of elections in Charlotte, Lee and Sarasota counties. But Jasmine Burney Clark, founder of voter rights organisation Equal Ground, said that the decision to exclude other counties will remain yet another example of Governor DeSantis defranchising voters. Yeah, way to make hurricanes veer to the right, Ron.
Special counsel John Durham, who failed spectacularly in his multi-year investigation trying to find anything to pin on Hillary Clinton, was in court last week prosecuting Igor Danchenko for lying to the FBI during the Russia investigation. Danchenko is the second and final person indicted by John Durham, the first being lawyer Michael Sussman, who was acquitted back in May. Durham called senior FBI intelligence analyst Brian Orton to testify against Danchenko and was probably a bit upset when his own witness said that he considered Danchenko truthful and helpful to the FBI's Russia probe, that securing him as a source was beneficial to the agency, and that Durham had misleadingly cherry-picked material that he wrote. This slightly undercut the allegations that Danchenko lied repeatedly to the FBI and impeded their investigation, and led to Durham trying to impeach his own witness on redirect by asking about the time he'd been recommended for suspension by the FBI. This shitshow was probably a factor in the subsequent acquittal of Danchenko on all charges, leaving Durham with nothing whatsoever to show for a 3.5-year investigation. It's almost like the Russia investigation was legitimate and not a witch hunt predicated on lies.
Fancy that. This was the moment 3 days ago when Senator Dale Lee Agsby plunged his campaign into crisis. So runs the opening of a segment of Brass Eye, a BBC comedy show from 1997, which used the news format to brutal satirical effect. It's part of the episode called Sex, which purports to cover a US election campaign on the part of Agsby, which gets interrupted when he releases several arcs of liquid silk from the fleshy nozzle of his fork during a televised rally. Brilliantly done, looks exactly like news, and ridicules television coverage and US politics in one fistful, as it were. 25 years later, and Randy Kaufman, yes, his real name, a GOP candidate running for an Arizona College District's governing board, was arrested on a charge of public sexual indecency after an officer allegedly caught him masturbating in his truck near a preschool. And there we have all the elements of a Chris Morris Brass Eye script, except, of course, it's real. Although Randy Kaufman was arrested on October 4th, he only suspended his campaign on Tuesday 18th, following media reports of his arrest. "I fucked up," he told the arresting officer, whose report also includes the excellently deadpan, "I immediately became alarmed as I saw Kaufman was manipulating his genitals in a masturbatory manner." In a Facebook post from May, Kaufman had said he wanted our children protected from the progressive left, obviously not from the masturbatory right, and it seems the Maricopa County Recorder's Office tacitly agrees, as despite the charge, it says it's too late for Kaufman's name to be removed from the ballot, and some people have already voted early. Yeah, insert a joke about coming too early, I don't know, in there. Well, that's all right, just so long as Randy continues, as he says, to never stop fighting to protect the United States Constitution and the values that make America the greatest country in the world. Yeah, them's the values.
In my final piece of good news, a Trump supporter had a very bad day. Back in 2020, Dennis Moller of Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, claimed that he had been the victim of a politically motivated attack when his camper was set on fire and his garage door was spray painted with graffiti that said Biden 2020, BLM, and an Antifa symbol. But it turns out Moller had actually destroyed his own property in a medal-worthy example of performative victimhood, which could not more accurately encompass today's GOP unless his middle name was Vladimirovich, which actually it is. Anyway, Dennis submitted insurance claims in excess of $300,000 and started a GoFundMe so that he could add grifting to his Republican credentials, and I'm happy to say that last week he pleaded guilty to wire fraud, which could carry a sentence of up to 4 years. Naturally, right-wingers condemned this in the same strong terms they used when Jussie Smollett faked a hate crime and blamed it on Trump supporters. No, of course they didn't. In fact, when he gets out, they'll probably elect him senator or something, because we live in a hellscape and nothing fucking matters anymore. Damn it, well, I tried.
It was very close. Yeah. Okay. Only 44 days after she'd taken office and 7 days after she visited King Charles for her weekly meeting, and who greeted her with...
Your Majesty, lovely to see you again.
Back again.
Oh, it's a great pleasure.
Dear, anyway.
Yep, back again, dear, oh dear. Anyway. And the same 7 days after she sacked Kwasi Kwarteng for agreeing with her that the mini-budget was a good thing, although the pound disagreed and fell through the floor, and so she appointed Jeremy, often misnamed on the media, Hunt, as Chancellor, who then reversed everything she'd agreed with Kwasi about. And a mere 5 days since newspaper, the Daily Star set up a webcam looking at a 49-pence lettuce with the question, who will last longer, our lettuce or Liz Truss? And a mere day since she said she was a fighter, not a quitter, in Prime Minister's Questions, said Liz Truss has resigned as Prime Minister.
Yay.
This followed the resignation of her Home Secretary, Cruella Braverman, whose dreams of repatriating refugees to Rwanda will now not be realised. And it isn't the fault of the tofu-eating Guardian-reading Wokarati after all. And this followed frenzied scenes of MPs being forced physically against their will through the door marked no in a vote to ban fracking again, the ban already enacted by the Tories several years ago, as it was seen as a potential vote of no confidence in Liz Truss's governments if they didn't. In reacting to these scenes, Deputy Chief Whip, the man responsible for persuading MPs to toe the party line, reportedly resigned. German TV news presenter Annette Dittert covered how he said he was feeling.
Woraufhin dann der stellvertretende Fraktionschef das Parlament mit den Worten verließ, I'm fucking furious and I don't fucking care anymore. Ich übersetze das jetzt mal nicht, aber das ist eine Partei, wo wirklich...
Brilliantly, she says in German, I'd rather not translate that afterwards. On a sweary side note, Krishna Gurumurthy was heard on a hot mic after MP Steve Baker shouted at him down the length of Downing Street following his interview with him.
Thanks a lot, Steve. It wasn't a stupid question, Steve. You know it. I'm very happy to go up against you on trust any day. What a cunt.
Baker didn't hear it. And it wasn't broadcast, but Krishnan apologised on Twitter anyway, and Steve Baker graciously accepted, though many people, of course, simply retweeted it. For instance, Fact Check UK adding, fact, by searching news stories of the past several years and perusing Mr Baker's voting record on www.theyworkforyou.com, we can confirm Steve Baker MP is, in actual fact, a cunt. So, what next for Blighty? A new leadership election? Though this time they won't even bother the 0.3% of the public they hounded about it last time, restricting the vote to MPs and not the party membership. In the absence of a general election, as of course that's not in the best interests of the Tories, there will be a closing down sale of the UK, followed by a series of appeal messages on the wireless asking for international support during this difficult time, before the whole miserable and rundown province is demolished to make way for Airstrip 1. Send help.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com, and if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or simply tell one other person in person about how much they like our podcast. Then you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump. Just like our newest patrons, Peter G, Brian and Mark Bedillion, our strawman level patrons, Schmutz, Mark Reiki and Amber R. Buchanan, our true Scotsman level patrons, Kaz Tui, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, Janet Uetta and Steve Bickle. Thanks for the pledge increase, Stephen, by the way. And our top patron, Lauren. Many thanks to all of you. Thank you so much for your support. It really does.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.